Hello, and welcome to Health Views with Deb Friesen, MD, a podcast about health and wellness within today's healthcare landscape. I'm your host, Dr. Deb Friesen with Kaiser Permanente, and I've been working in healthcare for over 20 years. During that time, I've learned that the most powerful tool for healing is the power of listening and the value of asking the right questions. Come join me as we'll together explore timely topics that impact people, businesses, and communities. Now let's check out today's view. So I'm very excited to have today's guest, and to be honest, I am fangirling a little bit right now. I read this guest's book, reached out on LinkedIn, and we were actually talking within the week. You're going to hear about the book a little bit later on. My guest today is Heather Younger. Heather is the founder and CEO of Employee Fanatics, a leading employee engagement and consulting firm. She is an in-demand keynote speaker, a diversity, equity, and inclusion strategist, and the leading expert on listening at work. She is a regular contributor to Forbes and Fast Company publications and is the best-selling author of The 7 Intuitive Laws of Employee Loyalty, which hit the top of the Forbes must-read list for HR professionals. That's impressive. She's written several other influential books covering employee engagement, loyalty, collaboration, and connectivity strategies, which are proven to drive real business results. Heather's deep passion for advocacy, resilience, human relations, and connection is incredible. And I can't forget, she's the host of her own podcast called Leadership with Heart, which I recommend to you to check out. So Heather, welcome. I am delighted to be talking with you today.
Thanks for having me, Deb. I appreciate it.
So given that it is still early in the year, I know it's February, but I'm still getting used to writing 2024 on everything. Can you share what you're looking forward to in the next 11 months?
Oh, I have a personal and professional. The personal is that I'm going to Italy with my family. We'll be going to Rome and Florence, Tuscany, and probably going to get some pizza in Naples. So I'm excited about that. And then I'd say the second big thing is that I'm rolling out a masterclass for organizations where they can kind of plug and play and allow it to be their leadership development program for 2024, 2025. And so it's taken a lot of production, editing, all the things, but I'm excited that'll be coming out here in the next week or two.
That actually does sound like a lot of work and sounds really exciting and a way to extend your influence without having to do it personally all the time. So I love that for you.
Absolutely.
And speaking of your work, I'd like to just give everybody a sense of maybe who you are a little bit, as much as you feel like you want to share about who you are as a person, your development, and how you became an expert in active listening at work.
It's so interesting. Most people, they don't know it about me, or they do and they're kind of ignoring it. But I have a background in law. So I was trained as a lawyer. I'm not practicing anymore. And I can think of just even there where a lot of the listening became real appropriate, right? And important. And as far as getting to the bottom of the truth of the matter, right? And so it became super important to me to be looking for evidence, evidence of what truth was. Evidence of like looking at body language, asking the right questions, just really getting to the bottom of what was real and what was imagined. And so some of that started way back then. And then I kind of went on a journey. I left the practice of law, started working in large account management, customer experience, employee experience. And through every one of that, like that parts of those, that journey, I saw that people were not listening to one another, really. They really were making, embedding assumptions into almost every interaction that they had. And so then every action they took, every step they took from there really was founded on not the truth. And then all the results they got, they weren't getting the results they wanted because they were taking actions based upon falsity. So I realized early on that that was going to be a focus. And I kind of just leaned into that, whether I was an employee space, whether I was working with customers as a leader of teams, I just leaned into that concept of how do we get to the truth and how do we act on the truth and not on assumptions. And so then I was working in an organization some years ago, and I was going through, the company was going through a merger of 5 companies. I was leading customer experience at the time, and the culture was going downhill fast. People were not feeling heard or seen. People were not feeling in the loop on what was happening. A lot of fear and mistrust set in. And I could feel myself being dragged down by that same sentiment. And I went to the head of HR and I said, listen, we have got to do something about our lack of engagement, the mistrust that's here, it's rampant. And she said, you're right. You should go do something about that.
I was like, She didn't let you put the monkey on her back, huh?
Yeah, I put it on her back and she gave it right back to me. So I said, okay, well, I'm not in HR, but I'll do it anyway because I'd already kind of acted like a cultural ambassador up to that point. And I would always uplift people, whether they're on my team or not. I always wanted to do that. And so I brought people around the table who already expressed this desire to be kind of the change they were seeking, to get out of the muck or get stuck, like I always say, and get unstuck. And so we worked together and I started to see the walls break down and there was more connection and curiosity instead of fear, like in the environment. In that inner workings, the merger itself didn't go so well because they weren't listening to customers and employees who were willing to tell them what they needed to do to make the merger happen. And so there was a layoff, about 200 people. I was in the first round of that. And I realized, though, right in the moment, kind of the role I needed to play, which was helping organizations listen more effectively to the stakeholders that were ready to help them with all of the things they wanted, help them reach the outcomes they want, what they wanted. And so I was going to be the catalyst for that. That's how I kind of got on this journey of becoming this active listener.
I love that. And what I love about your book as well is it's applicable no matter where you are, in the corporate setting, in your home, interpersonally, and even with yourself. I think that there's sometimes things that we need to do to kind of complete that cycle. So let's talk about the work aspect of active listening, because I was really interested in how you kind of framed it up from that aspect. A lot of times when I've heard about active listening or reflective listening, it was really more of an interpersonal skill. And you say something and I'm going to say something back. And your book was just like an epiphany to me around digging deeper into what that actually means. I think it's a quote from your book, George Bernard Shaw. The single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it's taken place. And the concept is so true that we think that we're communicating, and yet how many times during the day, even just with my husband, do I like, oh, I said that. No, you didn't say that. And we go round and round because we really didn't actively listen to what was happening. And then I can only imagine how you had to flex a little bit or adapt when we think about the working environment being just like we are, virtual. And how different that was. So can you tell me about how COVID and the pandemic made you think differently about active listening in the workplace?
In the book, I try to address some of that kind of hybrid, remote, on the Zoom screen, Team screen stuff. There are some nuances. Because people weren't doing listening in person, even half great, I don't think I thought any differently from the remote perspective, except for my advice to everyone was what we saw with our eyes that we didn't see pre-pandemic. So what people's lives were really like, even with the team's blurred out background, we saw a lot more. We'd see like an elderly parent's hand come in between in the background where the blurred out background was at, right? We'd see a cat jump on there would be all these different things we'd see. And my advice was not to forget what we saw, because it's in the scene that we can pick up on all the other things that are happening besides what we hear. So it's like we can see that the kind of the body language just from the neck up, if they're only in that view like you are, that sometimes they're further back, you can see, you know, chest up or waist up. But when we see like there's this parent at home, there's a child at home that didn't go to college, there's cats around, there's stuff, you're able to have conversations with people. You can have a jumping off point for those conversations. And while I do think listening is relational, and that is because as we think about organizations are just legal entities. Inside of the walls or behind the Teams or Zoom screen are people. So it could be a 20,000, a 200,000 person organization. It is all of those people and how they interact with each other, how much they lean in to understand each other's needs on a daily basis and what they're getting to remove conflict, to increase awareness and understanding, is what makes the organization what it is, right? So I actually would go back to say the active listening is very relational, and that we are humans, whether we are at home or at work or in the community or the grocery store, we all have certain needs, wants, expectations in that listening and leaning in a way that removes our filter in a moment. That is the most important.
I know that we're going to dive a little deeper into the book that made me reach out to you, which is The Art of Active Listening. But I also noted that you actually published a book during the pandemic or at the tail end, The Art of Caring Leadership, How Leading with Heart Uplifts Teams and Organizations. So did you write this during the pandemic?
I did. I did actually. So at first, here's the interesting kind of the real life stuff. As a speaker, consultant, coach, author, all those things, right? Everything stopped.
Yes.
And just like everybody else on the planet that we're kind of are in the service industry where you have to meet people, it got a little hairy. it was a little crazy. There's a lot of stress. And we're like, what is happening? And I, in my kind of way of doing things, one of the things in the book is about, you know, building team resilience, which means starting with our own resilience. And one of the things I talk about often is focusing on a mission that is bigger than the adversity or the thing that's in front of you, like the thing that you're struggling with now. And for me, I had a deadline. I had a book deadline. It was May of that year. And I was like, I could have, they gave me an excuse. They said, nope, if you'd like, you can take, we can extend this another 6 months. And because I was already like pulling my hair out and going, like what's going to happen? I knew I needed to focus on something productive. So yes, I did. I wrote the book in 2021. I mean, it came out in 2021.
I'm impressed. Really well done. So let's actually turn to the cycle of active listening, which you talk about in your book. Again, I find a structure so helpful. And I will say there's nothing here that we haven't heard before in some context or another, but I love the way that you put it all together and how it just makes such sense as we go through kind of the different steps. So would you walk us through the cycle and then let's dig deeper into each step as we go along?
So the cycle is meant to be a kind of a step-by-step approach and also a framework for thinking about how to listen more effectively than we do right now. Because most of us, let's just be truthful, are fake listening. We're pretend listening. So this actually makes us double check ourselves. So the first step is to recognize the unsaid. And this kind of goes back to that first thing I was talking about earlier, which is like the thing we might see on a screen or the thing we see across from people. When we're sitting across people or we walk into rooms, we may not hear it. We're seeing, we're picking up through our gut and through our eyes, something is going on. And so when we recognize the unsaid in people or inside of cultures or inside an environment, now we start to pick up on cues and we recognize something's there that we need to broach, we need to pay attention to. And so we do that first before we do anything else. So that thing that we think like listening is, and I heard you said this and you said this. Oh, yes, you heard you say, oh, that was great. Oh, yeah, ha, 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 and I laugh, and I'm having all this responsiveness, which, by the way, is very important. Reflective listening, that reflective and better listening, very, very important. But if we skip what is not being said, what people don't feel safe enough to say, and what we, and we're picking up on it, but we don't quite know what it is, and we don't get comfortable getting uncomfortable knowing that, then we really can't go in and seek in a fertile way. And so that next step is seeking to understand. And so once we're at the point where we recognize the unsaid, we said, something's up right here. We need to go a little deeper. Now we go into seek. And seeking, from my perspective, we've heard of seeking to understand from Stephen Covey. When we think of seeking, it is seeking for the truth of the other. It's not seeking for my truth through my filter, through my lived experience, through my life. It's seeking the truth in another so I can solve for the issue that either divides us, solve for the outcome we're trying to get to jointly, solve for your issue that you need in order for our relationships to stay intact. I mean, there's so many reasons why you want to get to another person's truth. So you're digging deeper. You're leaning in to really, really understand their position, which if you think about it, this whole divided world, oh my gosh, if we all did that much more, we would be a lot less, you know, divided than we are right now.
And there's a challenge in there, right? Which is in the seeking to understand, like you said, we're always waiting for, but let me tell you what I want you to understand about me. And what if you do this kind of digging and you are seeking to understand, you think you've got it and you really get it, but they don't want to understand you. What happens in that cycle? Do you just give up? Do you call it out? What happens if you've really given it your all, but it just doesn't feel like it's coming back to you?
I've had this in a couple different scenarios. It does oftentimes in that situation take a lot of patience. So it might take time because embedded in seeking is also this idea of trust. And you can go really, really deep with somebody. What I mean by that is that people will tell you more the more trust they have in you so that you can dig deep and get to the root cause of the thing that's giving them angst or causing the division if that happens. So I know we'll talk a little about that, but that's kind of an underlying thing is that trust is embedded inside the seeking. One thing I would say is this. Don't worry yourself about what others do. You have to lead you first. You have to lean into being a better active listener from your perspective and own it in the ways that I describe here. And you can't be so distracted by the fact that someone else isn't giving something back to you. If we lived our life by saying someone didn't give something back to me all the time, we'd be miserable, probably nonstop. So just being filled up by your own desire to seek and seek in a fruitful way and get the results that you think that need to be happening, at least from your perspective, like I'm there and I know I'm evaluating myself at the end of the day, examining what was my intent when I walked into this interaction. And that intent then comes through and the people on the other end get it. I had one situation. I was working with a coworker. He didn't report to me. I was, let's say, hierarchically, I was a little higher than the organization, but we weren't on the same team. We worked together a lot. So we were required to in order to get the customer satisfaction. And he just could not trust that I really wanted the customer to be happy. And then I wanted him to like look good to the customer. And then I wanted our team to like win together for the benefit of the customer. And at some point I started to really, really see him and understand what he was struggling with. Part of it was his own background, his own lens that he just couldn't get past. Part of it was some trust issues. Part of it was his lack of understanding what the customer was really requesting and what it was like to even be with the customer. So what I did is I invited him to come with me on a customer visit. And these were like $1 million customers. So I would go on these quarterly visits. He had never been. He just was kind of in the background fulfilling orders and things. So one time I took him on the customer visit. And one of his things is he was always talking about how much I was always giving to the customer and how much it always seemed like I was one-sided to the customer. So he goes into this interaction with the customer. And I am not kidding. He was overpromising his heart to his heart's content. He was like so into the customer. When he finally came back, he had understood all of the advocacy I'd put forward of the customer. His trust immediately grew because he understood what the environment was like. So I kind of take him out of his place into the place I lived. And so that was allowing him to peel back his filter a little bit and kind of live in my world. And then he showed up just like I did, actually a little bit worse than I did when it came to like overpromising.
I love it. But what a great example of like literally taking him out of his usual space in order to have the information that he needed to drive empathy for both you and the customer. So that was fantastic. So step three is decode, and you talk about seeing the complete picture. How is decoding different from recognizing the unsaid?
So decoding is more taking in the information that you received in those first two phases. So recognizing the said is like a sensory experience, the eyes, it's the heart, it's the gut, right? Seeking ends up being that same thing, but now you're like, you may actually be asking questions. You may actually have interviews, you might do surveys, you might have a one-on-one, you may have town halls, you may have whatever that work environment might be. It's like pulling out all the different ways that you're going to get data, and it could be by the spoken word, okay? In the decoding part, you're saying all the stuff I've just learned and the things that we've gleaned as a team, by myself, whatever that is, I need to take some time to ponder what this means to me, to my team, to the organization, to our relationships, to whatever that, to our customers, whatever that is. I'm going to take time to decode, to break apart, to uncover the truth of what I just said and what I plan to do about it. What's the best next course of action, given all that I know now? And I may do it by myself, and I may do it with the team, and I might do it with my leaders, and I might do it. There's many different ways. It may be quick. It may take weeks. It may take months, depending on how big the issue is. I may be researching, uncovering other solutions. That decoding is the place most of us fall down because we want to understand and then boom, go act.
I was going to say the same thing. That's, yeah, ready, go.
Ready, go in most cases. Sometimes it's listen and I'm too debilitated that now I can't even act. So there's some people stop right at seeking. But the decoding part is very important. It's that, okay, pause. You want to act, but pause. Because if we don't, what happens is we end up stepping in it a lot. We like take actions that we shouldn't take. They're not congruent with what it is the other person expected from us. Sometimes we make things worse. Sometimes we don't give the other person, the other end, the opportunity to actually come up with their own solutions. So decoding is important. And after we've taken that time to reflect, we go on to that next step, the fourth step, which is action, to act. And a lot of times we take this for granted. Not every team or person wants to act. Often they're like, I am too afraid to act. What if I mess it up worse? What if I'm acting the wrong way? Maybe I don't even know if I can act on everything. So maybe I won't act at all. But action is where people start to see very clear evidence that you were hearing them, you were listening to them, because now you are taking those steps, some kind of step to alleviate the pain of the other person. To be clear, as we think about empathy, leaning in to understand someone's perspective, that is like kind of stepping in someone's shoes and understanding it. And compassion is taking action on behalf of another human, another person. And so that action part says, I am expressing some kind of compassion towards the thing that you expressed to me. It was a problem, it was an issue, it was a desire you wanted me to go do for you. You want to make sure that you are acting based upon what they've asked you. You want to ask permission to act because you don't want to act on the wrong thing. But action is very critical as we think about this cycle.
And I love how you gave the example around sometimes it's stepping back. You do step one and two, you step back into the ambiguity sometimes, waiting for the insight to occur, looking at the different options, and then you act, which is to say, the cycle of active listening is not in the next hour, we're going to figure this out because we're going to close the cycle. The conversation is actually very ongoing through your entire framework.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's why I make it, it's the cycle that has like movement to it, right? Where communication happens at every part of the cycle, meaning you're checking back in, you're going back and forth. I don't have it linear because it really isn't. It does continue. And obviously, if I were to even more properly represent it, it'd be like spinning wheels all throughout because there are so many points where we have to go back and forth. And so, for example, on the decoding, and we may come back to go back to the person we were seek some more, go back to decode, go to act, come back to the person. So there's a lot of the loop that's going on in the process. And so, for example, after we take action and we go to close the loop, well, the close the loop could mean you're closing the loop after you've taken action. You've closed the loop before you take the action to make sure the action is the right action to take first. It could mean you're going back to them because you can't take action and you want to go and see if there's a compromise. It may be that you're going back because you took one action out of three they requested. You want to check in. And so it may seem kind of complicated. This process actually can be done pretty quickly if it needs to be done, like at a table. And sometimes it's like, boom, it's urgent and you have to kind of go through it. But it is something to be thinking about as we think of listening. It's like, I'm going to be done. It's one and done. I'm done. I'm doing this right now. Blah, 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 and I'm done. I'm finished. No, it actually is a little bit more detailed than that. If your end goal is to make sure that those on the other end feel heard, valued, and understood, if you want that for the people on the other end, then you're going to go deeper than what we normally do, which is more surface and fake listening.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I love, though, that you do literally close the loop visually in your book, but also metaphorically by closing the loop, by connecting the dots, following up, saying even if things are in progress, but I'm working on it. How many times have we been so frustrated to learn that, you know what, the problem was solved, but no one ever told you about it? Or they checked and it wasn't possible to happen, but instead of coming back and explaining, it's an open loop for you, which keeps the tension going, which is uncomfortable, which then becomes part of the unsaid. And so if you can just close that loop, everyone is like, that feels better. I'm glad we had this cycle together.
It's so true. And I love the way you said that just right towards the end. I think when we think about the workplace, this is part of me like writing that first book on 7 and 2 of laws of employee loyalty, or even just the law school. But one of the areas that was always super interesting to me was the employer-employee relationship and the power dynamic that exists in there. And most often, to this day, it hasn't changed. Most often at work, particularly those below the C-suite, even sometimes them as well, when you're looking at like the board and other stakeholders above, there's a sense of powerlessness, a sense of helplessness where I can only do so much. I don't have the power to make this change, do this, to do that. And so I feel like this framework embeds more power in one-to-one relationships, which really are, if you look in aggregate, the thing that drives organizational outcomes anyway.
Yes.
It's the project leads talking to the project team, going out to talk to their team, talking then to the customer, right? It's all of these people, these human interactions that drive it.
Well, and what I love about your framework is when it does become part of the company language, then you kind of can also agree on where you are in the process. Someone else might be ready to act where, you know what, I'm still trying to figure out what the problem is. So let's get in the same place or have more conversation around that. I love the framework as it exists. And I think that it really is so helpful in that space of conflict. When things are going so well, you don't need to kind of recognize the unsaid unless people are happy and you want to call it out. But it's really in kind of uncovering the conflict, the spoken or unspoken, and looking for resolution. And the hardest place to be is that ambiguity, I think. Heather, when we think about the workplace, at some level, I think that the pandemic and COVID did give us glimpses into each other's lives that was really empathy building. And I think that we also, having come out on this side of it, also see a lot of polarization. Sometimes it's over little things, sometimes it's over big things. Depends on the person as to whether those are little or big, right? And it can be a little scary to maybe approach someone that you feel like you don't actually overlap with, that maybe this is a subject or content that's a little bit controversial. How is it that we literally can open up the conversation and create that psychological safety so that we can explore where we are in this together?
I'm going to give you an example because I believe in real life.
Love it.
Shortly, probably a few months after what happened with George Floyd, one of my friends, a good friend of mine, I hadn't heard from her. I was wondering where she was. And I was kind of like, I wonder why she isn't here to reach out and see how I'm doing, to be honest. She's a female white colleague, very close colleague of mine. And so she reaches out and she's distraught. I mean, distraught. And she's like, I am so sorry I haven't reached out to you. I just did not know where to start. I've done my research. I've read books. I've done everything that I need to do to try to educate myself. And I still don't even know the right words to say. And so I'm coming to you now with no opinion and with no anything but to say, can you help me? And she came to me in this real blank slate way. I call it blank slate. It's like a blank slate way of being, which says, I am not embedding judgment, knowledge, like I'm better than you in anything I'm about to come tell you. I'm actually coming to you and just purely like, I have no clue what I'm up to. All I know is I know you know more than I do, or I know I value you as my friend, my colleague, my coworker. Can you help me with this particular thing? Now, it doesn't have to be around the race or the DEI topic. It can be on any topic. It's going to people with like blank slate thinking with, I know it all, none of that I know it all, or I have an opinion, or I'm right way of thinking. And when you do that, you disarm people pretty quickly. And that means now they're not in it for the battle. They're in it for the relationship. They're in it for teaching. They're in it for connection. So that's what I would say. Whenever I've had some kind of conflict or some kind of difference or some kind of, there's something that's in between me and another person. And I know that I'm not going to win this. And I don't even know if I want to win this. I'm going to go into it with blank slate way of being. I'm going to be a little self-deprecating. I'm going to go into it with just like, I'm a little bit of an idiot in this. Can you help me? Because I know you know more. And people want to be heard. People want to be validated. People want to feel important. And in that moment, they feel that way. And if you can get people, not in a way that manipulate, because I don't want to be coming over that way, but in a way that really is like, I am a little clueless right now. I thought I knew this. I messed up a couple times. I've seen you work out really well in this area and do really well here. Can we have a conversation? Can we brainstorm? That's the way I would do it. Just super humble, self-deprecating, and blank slate.
And one of the things that you called out your friend did was actually educate herself as much as she could first. And I think that that's so important that we don't make people who are different from us our learning forums. There's a lot we can learn about a topic, and then we can learn about your experience in this topic, which is really where the connection happens. Now that I understand maybe a little bit better what's happening in race relations or with, you know, what happens in this space with capitalism or hierarchies, now I can come and say, and what's your experience of that? Which really, I think, is so helpful as well.
Absolutely.
Another place that I'd like to go with you, speaking of conflict, of ambiguity, of not understanding, is a lot of the work to be done that was uncovered during the pandemic around equity, inclusion, and diversity. And I'd love to hear how you recommend that folks use the cycle of active listening in that space. It's a conversation ripe for the happening in so many levels. And yet there's disenfranchised populations at every level, no matter where they are in the hierarchy, who maybe don't have trust, don't have safety. How do you use the cycle of active listening to have those deeper conversations and remove that unconscious bias and bring things to the surface?
Boy, that's a massive question.
Yeah, and you have the next 3 hours we've got scheduled. So.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I mean, one of the things that we do at my consulting firm, Employee Phonetics, is we go in and we'll help with a survey. So we'll create kind of a diversity, equity, inclusion surveys, and we'll get to like, we start with real broad. We get some maybe 3 to 5 things to focus on. And then we go in to marginalized groups and do listening sessions and maybe create some ERGs or some business resource groups there where they can go deeper. And like I said before, that embedded in this model, kind of underlying this model, is trust. And you can't get to that place of trust unless you spent time with people and really have understand them, they understand you. You've kind of proven yourself. You've kind of gone to bat for people. They see that investment by you in them and their plight. And then it makes it more ripe or easy for you to go and use this cycle. For example, let's say I'm going to give you a real example from a client. So there's a person who's, I was coaching for a while. He's an executive at a bank. And one of his team members, a woman, was a VP. So just right below him at maybe a SVP level, let's say. And there was one client who was a multimillion dollar client. And the client would always call her like little lady and say these things, these little like microaggressions to this particular woman as if she was not intelligent, as if she wasn't a valued member of the team. And at some point, this executive is a male who I was coaching, said to me, you know what? I just got fed up. I got real fed up. And I went to the client. I talked to the executive team first to make sure I could basically release the client if I needed to. And I went to the client and I said, listen, you've been saying these things to my coworker. She is a VP who has a lot of respect, a lot of experience. I've been offended every time you've talked to her like this, 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 and that. It's not acceptable. I need you to change those behavior patterns or else we are no longer going to be able to serve you as a customer of this big bank. And I was like, number one, kudos to him to have the bravery to do that, you know, that courage to do that. But that client, I think, and at some point they did hear him and he fixed his ways a little. It's not like he turned into like all of a sudden loving this person and speaking in beautiful ways to the woman. That was like super respectful, but he did change his ways. And so that one person having the courage to kind of speak up was really important. But see, he had spent so much time with that coworker. He did build trust. He built trust even in that action. He saw all the strengths that she provided and all the struggles that she had. So we leaned into kind of her discomfort and kind of stood in her shoes in the way that he could, of course, as a man could, but he did. And he said, I'm going to be an ally in that regard. So I think that when we're looking at listening, you know, recognizing and said in this case would be like watching her discomfort as that client would interact with her, paying attention, not ignoring it, and then saying, what am I going to do next? And then maybe having a conversation with her to say, like, how are you feeling in this? And see if she would feel comfortable with him having a conversation with the client, having a conversation with the leadership team to say, how can I show more compassion towards this colleague who I can see this is very uncomfortable? And to be honest, I'm uncomfortable. It's disrespectful, right? And then, so seeking in that way and then deciding to kind of talk to that leadership team is the decoding phase and figuring out what they're going to do next. And then acting by going to that client, really, to make sure that client understood where they stood and what they were going to be prepared to do to make sure that other client felt respect and importance and validation.
Yes.
And humanity, really. And then going back and closing the loop with that SVP to say, we had the conversation, what he said he's going to do, and hopefully he does it. If we don't see the action, here are the steps we're going to take. And for her to see that she had been heard either by eyes, by him witnessing things and watching her body language and seeing how she retreated or kind of just held back and maybe in ways she normally wouldn't. So that's a real life story, real life example. Those types of things happen all the time, how we can work through the cycle.
And it takes courage, doesn't it? It takes courage to be the person to speak up. And I think, again, there has to be some trust, but it also has to be matched in the moment with that person who's willing to speak up, even if you're unsure. And that's, I think, how you're talking about the culture changes is, I did speak up. I had the courage to do that. You also talk about another thing, which it's lead with curiosity. What does that mean to lead with curiosity?
When we're curious, I would say this, and most often, we aren't assuming positive intent. We're going in assuming that like someone is trying to win a match. Someone is trying to be right. Someone is trying to prove us wrong. When we lead with curiosity though, we take off our filter. We step out of our shoes and step into the shoes of the other person. We're curious in a way that makes us say, despite how I might feel about this or what my truth might be, for the sake of you, want to know what you want, need, desire, really, truly, fully. So my curiosity makes me lean into that. And I say, well, okay, instead of me assuming the thing you're doing is you're trying to win, you're trying to beat me, all the negatives, I want to go into this asking questions that really help me get to your truth. So it's like, okay, so that was an interesting response you just gave. Now I'm so curious, like, where'd that come from? Then they may say something. So then why is that? And why is that? I'm not going into why is that, why is that, why is that, so that as the lawyer in me, I can win this case.
Yes, right, right.
The curiosity helps me find the evidence of the real things you need. Because let's just think about this when we are thinking about life generally. We are going about our day, probably 60, 70% of the time, solving for things that aren't real. We're solving for things we assume. We're not solving for the real thing that's in front of us. If we lean in and lead with curiosity, we are really trying to dig in and find the other person's truth. And when we find that truth, now it connects to the other outcomes that we set out to have in our lives, in our workplaces, whatever. And now we, aha, the dots are connected. And now I can go continue on the journey with the reality in front of me as it relates to the other person or people or organization in front of me, not just my truth, because I have a very unique truth. And my unique truth, my kind of interracial, interfaith background, helps me be able to like stand in the middle of two polarizing, like two totally different things and go, okay, well, there's truth there and there's truth there. And the other person on this side might go, well, how can you dare say there's truth there? Well, there's truth there because, and it's because I lean in with curiosity and say, why would that person have that viewpoint? Now, what curiosity doesn't necessarily lead me to, not always, is that when I'm curious and I see their side, it does not mean agreement.
Yes.
So curiosity does not necessarily mean agreement. Sometimes it does. Like if you were a lawyer or if you're in a place where you're trying to negotiate, you want to have a level of kind of a meeting of the minds agreement. But the agreement, if we look at the very basic level, really is, I can see how you see that way. That would be the level of agreement we'd get to. I can see how you'd see it that way. It doesn't mean I agree that what you see that way is the way I see it or I find as my truth. I don't know if that answers the question, but this is where we go with it. And this is really, this is human dynamics. It is complex. We are not basic people. Don't treat each other at surface level. We have to go deeper, and leading with curiosity is the way to do it.
And you also called out that something actually happens in our brain with curiosity, which is we secrete dopamine when we actually exercise curiosity. And as a reminder, dopamine is that feel-good neurotransmitter, which again, even if you're not finding that overlap of what the truth is between you and the other person, at least there's a connection that's made. And even the willingness to listen to another viewpoint is enough to keep both sides thinking about it even more as you walk away from the conversation, which can be so meaningful and trust-building as well. As you think about, again, employees in the workplace, what is it that they should be thinking about with their colleagues, with the people who report to them, with the people they report to, as we think about your cycle so that they can feel more heard, more valued, more understood? What action item, let's jump to the action, can they actually skip to say, you know what, I'm actually going to commit to active listening, and here's how I'm going to express that today?
I would say from the, let's say, frontline team member level, having the courage to share your lived experience, share your truth, share the challenges you have is kind of the thing that you can own. Because if you can pipe up, you can speak up in the right context, in the right way, to the right people, that takes some discernment, of course. Then now the people who couldn't recognize and said, didn't have the time to recognize and said, maybe it was just so hidden they couldn't see it. Voila, now it brings it to the surface. Now they can start to see it. And maybe now they're inclined to seek in a way that does go deeper in your truth. So that's one thing I would say from the frontline perspective. From the manager or leader perspective, I think the key here is to slow down. Slow down. Stop being the check the box person. I know it feels good to achieve, to accomplish, to get things done throughout the day. But understanding that we miss so many opportunities to achieve more and be more when we go so fast that we do skip over what we're not seeing. And so that you can recognize the unsaid more when you slow down, when you get rid of the distraction. Someone walks into your room, into your office. Did your phone have to be there buzzing right next to you? Did your laptop lid have to be up? Can you shut that laptop lid down? Can you make sure that you're turned right towards them? You're being intentional about minimizing the distractions. And when you're there, you're not like looking at them and going, oh gosh, last week they complained 25 times. I'm hearing them again. They're going to come to me. This other thing is, again, when we do that, we automatically are having some of those biases pop in, no matter whatever. We're immediately going, oh yeah, they're just going to complain about this thing again, which is going to be non-validated again, da 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 da. But instead, if we start off as a blank slate, when they come in, they'll feel that kind of openness to hear what it is they're saying. And in the moment now, they're feeling heard by you. It's exciting to me that we don't have to ask permission to be these kind of people, that we don't have to wait for a green light, that we can choose to be our own green light.
And for the listener of the podcast today, as they interact with family, loved ones, what advice would you give them?
So funny, I wrote this book, The Art of Active Listening, How People at Work Feel Heard, Valued, and Understood, and it's because I have 4 children.
And that's your work.
I'm not always the best at this listening thing with them. And so I always say, like, I'm not a home place expert. I'm a workplace expert, right? But having said that, I just rolled out this certified Art of Active Listening facilitator program. And my original cohort of people that came through really surprised me. I was expecting them to tell me all these benefits of the workplace, in which they did, but they actually started off every single one of them by talking to me about how much it really served them at home, and how, you know, one person said his son recognized some differences in him, pointed out and asked her, like, have you been doing some training? And then another one, a daughter. He was picking up on by recognizing and said, who his daughter, who was already driving, old enough, you know, not to need him to drive, was feeling uncomfortable driving in bad weather. Without actually saying that, he picked up on it and he canceled an appointment that he had to make sure that he could drive her so that she would feel safe. And he goes, I would have never picked up on that if I didn't kind of know this cycle and understand what listening really was. And so when I hear those kind of stories, and even just how I experience this at home, when either my kids call me on the carpet because I'm not doing a great job, or when I am able to recognize things that are happening that I need to slow down and I need to take the time for them, I know it's embedded in this model and then I'm living it every day, and I'm not perfect at it. Nobody is, but we're all works in progress and we just have to be open to getting better at it.
I love that. So if folks want to learn more about you, about active listening, where can they go?
I would say probably the best place. There's kind of 2 places to follow me. One would be LinkedIn. So you just go to Heather Younger, LinkedIn, you'll find me there. Boom, you'll see all my stuff that I post there. But the main place, I think, for the active listening would be heatheryounger.com. We have a certified Art of Active Listening facilitator program. We're in our 2nd and 3rd cohorts now this year. And so that's going to be teaching people the framework and having them be able to teach other people the framework in and outside their organizations. So you'll learn all you need to know about how to listen well with that.
I love it. I love it. And thank you for this conversation. I will tell you, you've made me a better listener. I don't know that my family, friends, loved ones, or colleagues would call that out, but I do try to actively put these steps into practice when I approach appointments or meetings or collaborations. So thank you for being a positive influence in my life and in the workplace as well. So what if you read the book, study the steps of the cycle, you are ready to bring this into your team, to your workplace, and it just isn't getting a good reception? Your enthusiasm is stymied. We can't seem to get lift off of this idea. What might we be able to do to maybe address those barriers, uncover what's unsaid in that situation, perhaps, in order to make this a place where we can have real conversations that matter?
I do believe in real simple concept, and that is leading by example. Lead by example, build a winning team. Lead by example, build a winning culture. You have to own this in your core. Then you embody this thing, and it starts to rub off on people around you. And people will be curious to know how you're able to get to the bottom of problems when they weren't, how you're able to find root causes of things when they weren't. And so you demonstrate this new found knowledge, And then they see it and then they inquire and then people start to do more of it. And then there are going to be those people who never get it. Someone once said to me, sell mushrooms to mushroom lovers. And what that means is you aren't going to get the jerks inside your workplace or the people who have no desire to change and get better, to change and get better. So what you'll do is you'll embody it, and people around you who are interested in getting better and you rub off on and it just starts to flow over on, those are the people that you can focus on. Don't focus on those who will never change.
Thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
I have too. Thanks for so much for having me.
Thanks to my guests for joining me today. And thank you for listening to the Health Fuse podcast with Deb Friesen, MD. I hope you'll share this episode with colleagues, friends, and family members who are interested in diving deeper into meaningful and relevant health and wellness topics. I look forward to the next conversation and will share another episode of Health Fuse with you soon. Take good care. This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The discussion reflects the opinions of the speakers and is not intended to represent Kaiser Permanente policy. It does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. The content is not intended to be a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information is at the listener's own risk. Listeners should not disregard or delay obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their medical professionals.